the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text 34, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Diti Ruvacha, Name Grabham Imam Brahman, Bhutanam Rishabho Vadhit. Hibutanam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The beautiful Diti said, "My dear Brahmana, kindly see that my embryo is not killed by Lord Shiva, the Lord of all living entities, because of the great offense that I have committed against him." Purport. Diti was conscious of her offense and was anxious to be excused by Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has two popular names, Rudra and Ashutosha. He is very prone to anger as well as quickly pacified. Diti knew that because of his being quickly angered, he might spoil the pregnancy she had unlawfully achieved. But because he was also Ashutosha, she implored her Brahmana husband to help her in pacifying Lord Shiva. For her husband was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. In other words, Lord Shiva might have been angry with Diti because she obliged her husband to transgress the law, but he would not refuse her husband's prayer. Therefore, the application for excuse was submitted through her husband. She prayed to Lord Shiva as follows. I'll just read the next verse as well because it sort of ties in. Let me offer, so this is a Diti's prayer. Let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously very ferocious, great demigod, and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Again, purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Diti prayed for the mercy of Lord Shiva very cleverly. She prayed, "The Lord can cause me to cry, but if he likes, he can also stop my crying because he is Ashutosha. He is so great that if he likes, he can immediately destroy my pregnancy, but by his mercy, he can also fulfill my desire that my pregnancy not be spoiled. Because he is all auspicious, it is not difficult for him to excuse me for being punished, although he is now ready to punish me because I have moved his great anger. He appears like a man, but he is the Lord of all men." Nama Om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalesha Mali Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gaudavani Pacharine Nevisesha Shunivari Pacharine Sitarine. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Patitunam Pavanevyo Vaishnaveva Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stadi Krishna Vidyana. So this is the great Lord Shiva. There's always a little bit of controversy about Lord Shiva with the devotees. Should we worship Lord Shiva? Should we not worship Lord Shiva? Should we respect Lord Shiva? So here it's pointed out that Lord Shiva is both can be very angry, but he can also be very merciful in the same token, very compassionate. So in the Brahma Samhita, Lord Shiva is very nicely described by Lord Brahma. Shiram yatadidi vikara vishesha yoga sanjayate hi nitata pritikasti hetu yasambhutam apitata samupaiti karya govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. The translation of that is, just as milk is transformed into curd by the actions of acid, but yet the effect of curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, that is milk, so I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom the state of Shambhu is transformed to the performance of the work of destruction. Now I wanted to just read out the purport to that verse from a translation, a purport by His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. And just to show you how deep and philosophical Maharaj was. And it gives you an idea of the personality of Lord Shiva. The real nature of Shambhu, the presiding deity of Maheshtam, is described. Shambhu is not a second godhead other than Krishna. Those who entertain such discriminating sentiment commit a great offense against the Supreme Lord. The supremacy of Shambhu is subservient to that of Govinda. Hence, they are not really different from each other. The non-distinction is established by the fact that just as milk is treated with acid, turns into curd, so Godhead becomes subservient when he himself attains a distinct personality by the addition of a particular element of adulteration. This personality has no independent initiative. The said adulterating principle is constituted by the combination of the stupefying quality of the deluding energy, the quality of non-plentitude, of the marginal potency, and a slight degree of ecstatic cum cognitive principle of the plenary spiritual potency. This specifically unadulterated reflection of the principle of the subjective portion of the divinity is Sadashiva. Does everybody get that? In form of the effulgent masculine symbol god Shambhu, from whom Rudra Deva is manifest. In the work of mundane creation as the material cause, in the work of the preservation by destruction of the Sundari Asuras, and in the work of the destruction to conduct the whole operation, Govinda manifests himself as Guna Avatar in the form of Shambhu, who is the separated portion of Govinda imbued with the principle of his subjective plenary portion. The personality of the destructive principle in the form of time has been identified with that of Shambhu by the scriptural evidence that have been adduced in the commentary. The purport of the Bhagavata shlokas, that is, Vaishnavam yata Shambhu, etc., is that Shambhu, in the pursuance of the will of Govinda, works in union with his consort Durga Devi by his own time energy. He teaches pious duties, dharma, as a stepping stone to the attainment of spiritual service in the various tantra shastras, suitable for the jivas to attain jivas in different grades of conditional existence. In obedience to the will of Govinda, Shambhu maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of illusionism, Mayavadism, and the speculative Agama Shastra. The 50 attributes of the individual souls are manifested in a far vaster measure in Shambhu, and 5 additional attributes, not attainable by the jivas, are also partly found in him. So Shambhu cannot be called a jiva. He is the lord of the jivas, but yet partakes of the nature of a separate portion of Govinda. That's pretty heavy philosophy. So Lord Shiva, for our purposes, and Prabhupada said that to us all, Prabhupada said that Lord Shiva to us is the greatest devotee. The greatest devotee. And we should pray. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, one of the great organizers of this universe. In fact, he's one of the principal Mahajans. Brahma and Shiva are the two principal Mahajans. And from this purport, these purports, we can read that actually he has an angry side. He's quick to anger. But he also has a very merciful and compassionate side. And that's also easy to please. So, Diti made a big mistake. She made a big mistake. She had a fall down and she inculcated her husband while he was performing very sacred rituals for Lord Shiva. And she was so obsessed, not so much that she wanted to actually have a sexual relationship, but she was so obsessed in getting a child, that she interrupted this great sage, Kashyapa Muni. And so she made a big mistake. But in a sense, she was a smart woman. She understood how great a devotee Kashyapa Muni was of Lord Shiva. And she thought, well, if I approach Lord Shiva, because I've made this blunder, he's going to be angry. But he's very pleased with Kashyapa Muni because he's a great devotee. So if I ask my husband to pray to Lord Shiva, then everything might stand a chance. So she was very, 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 very smart. So, to praise Lord Shiva first, and beg his mercy. You notice how she couches her prayer. It's really interesting, you know, when you've offended someone or you've done something wrong. If you do two things first, right? You praise the hell out of that person. You are such a magnanimous person. You are so full of compassion. You're such a nice person, you know. You just do the best work. You're just so compassionate. And then you come in with the, you know, and being such a compassionate person and such a loving and empathic person, you're surely going to forgive me because I've made such a horrible mistake. I'm such a fallen person. I've done so many mistakes. I can't do a thing right. Obviously, the person is going to forgive that personality, correct? So, a brahmana, if he is approached, and he or she is approached in this way, will always forgive. Always forgive. If someone comes in sincerity and offers their apologies, look, I've made a mistake, please forgive me, offer their obeisances, it's forgive and forget. Straight away, a brahmana doesn't even think about it anymore, that's it, it's forgiven. Oh, you've offended me, that's okay, no problem. You know, you see the examples in our Shastra of Haridas Thakur, that they committed so many offences against this person, he couldn't care. That's it. That's all right. So a Brahmin always forgets. A Kshatriya doesn't, actually. It's the duty of a Kshatriya to actually follow the law. You know, no matter how much. You know, I didn't mean to kill that person. I really didn't mean it. So that's it. Finished. You're in prison. So, you know, it's easy to forgive if you are a compassionate, empathic sort of person. Those of you that are parents, you know, when the child has done something wrong, and, you know, it's easy to forgive a child. It's very easy to forgive a child. And if they're sincere, if your child comes up and says, oh, listen, Daddy, I really didn't mean to put, you know, dirt all over your car. I didn't know what was going on. And so, you know, the father can very easily forgive the child. What's most important is that there's sincerity. You know, if we have committed an offence sometime in our life, we have to have this sincerity. We have to have some sort of understanding that we've committed a wrong, understand the wrong we've done, and then offer ourselves to that person that we've offended. And with this quality of compassion, we're able to forgive. And devotees are generally very forgiving in their way. Lord Shiva is the supreme abode of this principle. And there are many, many examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He is paradukaduki. He's very, very forgiving. But he's sensitive towards the happiness and distress of others. He has a very compassionate heart. And then it goes to think about, well, what's the greatest welfare work? The greatest welfare work is to guide and lead a person to the path of eternal life. So he's compassionate. Lord Shiva is so compassionate that even if someone is performing austerities, even if they're a demon, he'll provide them with different boons, you know. Even if he knows they're going to make a hell of a mess and they're going to disrupt people, he still gives them that boon. So he's very, 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 very lenient, and he's paradukaduki. And even sometimes we sometimes get criticism, actually, even within our movement, for being compassionate. There are some people that think that we should actually just be very narrow-minded in our understanding of Krishna consciousness and just present the philosophy and don't do so-called philanthropic work. This is a debate at the moment within our Krishna consciousness society. They don't. Some, on one faction of our society, believe that we shouldn't be doing things like chaplaincy, interfaith, food for life. They're all just mundane philanthropic works. But as is pointed out, that it is not that welfare work which is the ultimate goal that we're trying to achieve. In Krishna consciousness, we're not just trying to relieve people's material suffering by doing Food for Life program, by establishing hospitals, by interrelating with people and showing compassion. And that's not our goal. Our real goal is to actually bring someone to Krishna consciousness, to bring them to this Vedic understanding, this principle of Krishna conscious understanding. So it's being merciful by having this mercy, by being compassionate. We actually develop good Krishna conscious connections in so many different ways. And we see that time and time again. in the work that I'm doing, in the work that other people are doing through Food for Life. That people are coming to Krishna consciousness because of our outreach, because of our compassionate nature. So here we had Diti, and she's throwing herself in a humble mood towards Lord Shiva, just begging Lord Shiva, please forgive me, but she's doing it through her husband. And sometimes when we allow ourselves to be dominated by someone else, because that's what we're doing when we're actually apologizing to someone. We're actually humbling ourselves and we're saying, look, I'm terribly sorry, I didn't, you know. Then actually we're throwing ourselves at the mercy of that other person to forgive us. And so sometimes if a person has material consciousness, that can be manipulated. That can be negatively used. The classic example of that is when someone is kidnapped, or just recently we've seen on our televisions and news reports about terrorism and how people have been threatened and punished, and people are forced to forgive their so-called different religious traditions and so on and so forth. I'm sorry, I'm a Christian, you know, whatever. And a person of material consciousness finds this very gratifying, finds it actually very satisfying to have someone underneath them, someone that they can push around. To the extreme extent is that actually some people, very demoniac people, get a thrill out of actually controlling a person's life, that you have their life in their hands. And that is actually one of the highest material pleasures in this material world, to actually have control. Not that any of us will ever want to or get near that experience, but to have that control over someone else's life. It's actually, in a sense, you're wanting to be like God. I have control over you. I don't know if any of you have seen those horrible videos of the terrorists that hold these innocent people that are doing some philanthropic work in Arabic regions, and then they are standing there with these people ready to cut their throats. Have you, anybody seen that? It's actually horrific. And this is such a an intoxicating thing. These people are motivated by this sense of having power over someone else. That power over someone else is something that has to be checked by the devotees at all time. At all time. It has to be checked in particular also in the situation of marriages, in our marriage situation. At the moment, it is a great topic of discussion within parliamentary circles, within community circles, within different religious traditions and stuff. This thing about family violence. There's investigations going on, there's conferences going on, there's legislation which is trying to change people's attitude about family violence in the home. And it's all about this principle of somehow or other feeling that I have a right over you. I have some strength over you, some power over you. And generally speaking, it is the male, because we, in a sense, not exclusively, but generally, physically, a male is the stronger sex. You know? I mean, I've met some ladies that have got a lot more muscle than I have, but generally speaking, a man is more powerful. And so it's easy to dominate someone that hasn't got as much power. And so we have to, as men, we have to really keep a check on that we can have power over someone else. And it is an intoxicating thing to actually tell someone, I want you to do this. So we have to be really mindful. In our Krishna consciousness especially, we have to be mindful that we remain respectful. We remain respectful understanding the great knowledge that's been given to us, that everyone is a spirit soul. And that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. We're not these material bodies. And in this lifetime, you know, we're in either a male or a female body, and we have to act the role of, as a male, your duty is, in a sense, to be the leader within a family, generally speaking. But then it's also the role of a lady to be the support and the facilitator, that if the man is slipping in some way or another, that she chastises him and says, hey, get back on the ball. So this was always emphasized when we took initiation. It was emphasized at our wedding, also our Vedic sacrifice. And the spiritual master said, you know, just as he said, as far as Bhakti and I are concerned, just as Bhakta is following, you should follow your husband. But if he in any way is slipping in his Krishna consciousness, then you should become like a tiger and bring him back to Krishna consciousness. So in this situation also with Kashyapa Muni, you know, we're making out that that Diti was the one that was at fault. But actually, I mean, Kashyapa Muni was also pretty ready to give up his duties and say, yeah, okay, let's go, you know. So he's also implicated in this. What I'm trying to say is that we have to be very aware in a marriage situation, in any situation, that we don't dominate another person. We have to follow our dharma. We have to follow the things we have to do, but in the same token, we must be very, very careful not to misuse our position. You know, even to a certain extent, to a lesser degree, even as a devotee, we feel elated when someone is submissive to us. We feel actually a thrill in that, you know. I mean, sometimes I have to go to Hindu functions or something, and the Hare Krishna movement is so well respected, right? And I'm acting as a representative of the Hare Krishna movement, and within the Hindu community, because of that respect, people come up to you and offer their pranams and touch your feet, and, you know, are very... Now, inside, because I'm still a conditioned soul, you know, you think, hey, that's pretty good. Boy, there, you know. Wow. And it's so you have to check that at all times. You have to really be aware of it. And so, you know, this whole thing of feeling elation when someone is submissive to us is a thing that has to be checked with humility and with intelligence. Are they actually submitting to this lump of flesh, or are they submitting, or, you know, being submissive to whom I'm representing? And when I'm in those different occasions, I'm representing His Divine Grace and the Hare Krishna movement and Krishna Himself. So thereby you channel it. It's not me there. They're like this. So this is very, very important. We mustn't misuse our position. We mustn't misuse our position. At one time, Bhavananda Prabhu, who was a guru, and he was here, and he explained that actually the position of guru is so delicate for a conditioned soul, you know. And even if one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, it is such a delicate situation. And he compared it to, I don't know if any of you, prior to being a devotee, of course, ever took in an intoxication called champagne. Champagne gives you a really euphoric sort of feeling, apparently. Not that I've ever had champagne. Maybe a little bit prior to being a devotee. Anyway, he said that feeling of people surrendering to you, being submissive to you, is like champagne. It's heady. Wow, far out. They're all bound down. There was actually one sannyasi, really charismatic devotee, really wonderful devotee, you know, and exceptionally good-looking sannyasi. And he was telling me one time that he found it so difficult to contain that understanding, that realization, and to contain that euphoria when he would enter into a temple room and all the young lady devotees would fall at his feet. Do you know? It wasn't so much he was caring about the guys, he couldn't care less whether you guys were banged down, but he was upset and he was disturbed when the young women were all paying their obeisances to him as a sannyasi. And he was expressing that this is one of the hardest things in the renounced order of life when you take on this responsibility of a sannyas. So you have to be so Krishna conscious and reflect everything back to Krishna. Unfortunately, he left his sannyas order sometime later, which was really unfortunate. He was an incredibly charismatic devotee. He's still a devotee, but he's not a sannyasi. So even in our Krishna consciousness, we have different grades of devotees. You know, it's not all one. We're not all just, hey, we're all just buddy-buddy. It's not like that. Even within our Krishna consciousness, we have different tiers of relationships. You know, we have those people that are older than us in our devotional career, are those people that are instructing us, our guru, our shiksha gurus, our temple authorities, and so on and so forth. And so out of courtesy and out of humility and out of respect, we submit ourselves to them. We are humble to them. What would you like, Prabhu? Would you like me to do that, Prabhu? You know, so many times I see, you know, within the temple, the respect that's given by some of the devotees to the elder devotees. It's actually really enthusing. You know, where the flowers are coming around, say, for example, and the devotee actually consciously thinks, who's the senior devotee here? You know, because of longevity and because of shastric understanding. And the younger devotee straight away goes to the older devotee and offers them the flowers. This, you know, it's not that the older devotee is thinking, hey, those flowers should be coming to me. No. It's again following this system which is set up by the Vedic culture, that we actually give submission and humility and respect and obeisances to that person that is older than me, because that person has the ability to enliven me and to enthuse me in my Krishna consciousness. And also the fact that person with longevity has hung in there and is staying with the principles and is following the spiritual master diligently. And out of respect, I give that worship to him or her. And it should be both ways. So that is that position of humility. Then you have the next position of equality, where God brothers and sisters together, you know, that you're just buddies. And you associate with one another. And that is good. And you learn from one another and you share your difficulties and your positiveness with each other. It's a very, very important thing that you develop good peer friendship. It's imperative in our Krishna consciousness that we develop. It's not that everyone is on that level of friendship, but you pick a few people that you can relate to, that you can connect with, that you can share your mind with, and reveal your mind and reveal the difficulties that you're having. In confidence. Very, very important thing. If you're sharing a friendship on that level of equality, you share it in confidence. If someone is telling you, like say for example, if Ditti came up to someone and said, boy, I really had a difficult fall down, you know, and I'm feeling so depressed about it. What am I to do, you know? And then the next thing, you know, their friend goes, did you know that Diti fell down with Kashyapa Muni, you know? And they're like, she's pregnant. So that's not what's necessary. We need empathy, we need compassion. So on that level of equality, we have to be very, very careful and gentle. And by that association, when a person reveals their mind to you, then you take it on board. If it's something that they've had a difficulty, a problem or something, you try to advise them to the best of your ability and you guide them to the best of your ability and you pray to Lord Krishna that somehow or other, please inspire me, because Krishna is within you, and you ask Krishna, please inspire me that I can help my god brother or sister, that I can get them through this difficult time somehow or another. And then you keep it confidential between the two of you. Similarly, when people are struggling in their sadhana, again you help them, again on that question of equality. So whether one is sees the devotee as a high position or an equal position, there's empathy. But the greatest empathy is for those people that are under you, those people that are submissive to you. And all of us will be in that situation. All of us, as we grow in our Krishna consciousness, will have people that will look up to you. And you then, in same token, have to be more empathic, more compassionate, more caring than anything else. You have to really, really nurture that person. In fact, you have to actually see those people that are under you, because in a sense, what happens is you become their Diksha Guru. Your instructing guru, you know, and Prabhupada has emphasized that all of us have to become guru. And so if that person is there, they have to actually be so compassionate to the extent that you virtually have to see those people that are under you as your children, in a sense. And treat, not that you treat them childlike, but you have to have that love and compassion and guidance is there. So that's within our movement. We have to develop that consciousness. Some materialists love having people below them and push them around. They have bosses at work. Who's had a boss at work that has been like that? I think all of us at one stage or another have had a boss that's been really, really a pain and pushed you around and sort of liked the fact that they're pushing you around, you know. So anyway, yeah, eventually they'll get their own medicine, they'll get their own canuppins, because we know the law of karma. As you sow, so shall you reap, my dear friend. Haven't you read your Christian doctrine? So ultimately, but at the time it feels pretty, pretty lousy. So there is this one story in the Vedas called Puna Musika Brava. Anybody heard of that? So one mouse was like that in an oppressed situation, and because he was being afflicted by the cat, and the cat kept on harassing him, you know. So he came to the great sage, you know, and people approach sages always for a material benediction. And so this mouse came up, and the sage is sitting there, and the little mouse is talking mouse. It's not bad, actually. Maybe his name was Mickey. Anyway, the mouse starts talking. He says, "Dear sage, you know, you have to help me. I'm being oppressed by this cat." So the sage says, "Yes, well, what do you want?" He said, "Make me a cat." So he says, "Okay. So the mouse becomes a cat, and the cat's walking around, oh, no, pretty cool. I'm like the boss, you know. And then he found, hey, hang on a tick, there's this dog, and he chases the cats, and he harasses the cats. There's always someone harassing someone. And so then he runs back to the sage, and he says to sage, please, I'm a cat, yeah, but the dog is now chasing me, and it's even worse than the cat when the cat was chasing me. So he says, what do you want? Oh, I want to become a dog. So the sage said, now you're a dog. Now he goes, right, now I'm a dog. And he's barking around the place and he's bouncing around, you know, no one to control him. Now I'm a dog and the cats fear me, the mice fear me, everybody. And then a big tiger comes. He loves dogs. He likes eating dogs. So he's freaked out. This was an even bigger oppressor. And so he goes back to the sage and he says, sage, please, now I know I'm a dog, but the tiger is now affecting me. And, you know, what I've got to do? And he said, I want to become a tiger. And so the sage said, and so now you're a tiger. And then he was in the position as a tiger. And he started looking at the sage and he's going, he's a tiny little morsel. He's a little skinny, but... And he said, oh, is that what you want? And now become a mouse. And he's back as a mouse. So this is the thing. Saintly persons are very eager to bless us. Even in the Hindu community, they're always wanting blessings. Oh, Bhakta Prabhu, please bless, you know, a little child and this one, you pat him on the head and stuff. So anyway, the mouse wanted to become the tiger and now eventually back again. So again, that is this this curse, Puna Musika Brava. Again become a mouse and again become a mouse. The same way we want to be the big, big boss. You know, so many of the materialists, when they're working in, I remember when I was working, what was that? What was it? It was a company called Hills International. You know Hills Hoist? They make the Hills Hoist thing. And I was in accounts payable, a clerk, right? And we had the managing director, you know, and he took me in his office one day and he said, Bert, what would you like to do? And I said, well, I want your job. You know? So there's always this boss that you want to somehow or other take his job, because somehow or other you think that by getting that job I'll be happy, but actually there's always someone that's another one on top. So anyway, if there's a boss that's pushing you around, ultimately he'll get his comeuppance in due time. In Krishna consciousness, however, We're eternally just devotees. We don't care whether we've got an awkward boss or a negative boss or a bossy situation or whatever. We just want to serve and be humble devotees of Krishna. That's all we care about. So Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example of that. You know, like we were just hearing about the Jaladutta and Prabhupada arriving in the West. And his attitude, that humble submission was there. You know, my Lord, just let me dance, make me dance, make me dance. I don't care what you do with me, just make me dance. Because he was so focused on just bringing this message of Godhead to the fallen conditioned souls in the Western world. So this is the attitude that we have. Just surrender to Krishna. We don't care. It's humble service to Krishna. There's another Vedic story about a mouse as well. You probably heard this one as well. And this one is of a sleeping lion. It's actually not about a tiger. It's about a mouse and a lion. You heard that one? There's this lion that's sleeping. You heard that one? Yeah, there's a lion that's sleeping. And this is about mercy. And we're talking about mercy and the mercy of Lord Shiva. So this tiger, lion, is ferocious, but he's sleeping. And this little mouse is sort of bewildered where he is. And he somehow or other crawls on the lion's nose and starts tickling him in the inside of the nose. And the lion wakes up and grabs the mouse. And it's just about to eat him. And the mouse was very, very intelligent, and he pleaded for his life. He begged, you know, the lion, you know, you're the king of the jungle. What will you achieve by killing a mere little mouse like me? I'm nothing, you know. You're way beyond this. You shouldn't have to kill me. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I didn't see that you were sleeping there. I thought your nose was my home. I could crawl in there and be comfortable. I'm really, really sorry. Can you forgive me? And the lion says, yes, okay, I forgive you. Go. And so the mouse scurries off and he's free. And then all of a sudden the lion was walking around one day and a man captured him in a net and was going to take him to a zoo. And he was captured. And the mouse actually saw that the lion was captured. And so that he thought, he saved me, now it's my turn to save him. And so he came up to where the lion was kept in this net, and he said, my friend, do you remember me? Oh yeah, you're that pesky little mouse that crawled up my nose. He said, I'm here to save you. I can gnaw through the ropes and you'll be free. So he gnawed through the ropes and the lion escaped. And so this is the message that the Vedas say here is that... what was it again? The moral of the story. First, never punish others in a fit of anger. So never punish others in a fit of anger. So when you're angry, don't ever punish a person straight away. So that's why Diti is sort of firstly pacifying Lord Shiva. Just calm down. You're a really great god. You know, you're such a wonderful person. You're the king of the Jivas. And, you know, I'm such a fallen soul. And so... the anger level goes down. So, as they might be a great help in the future. So don't punish anybody in anger. Second, no one is too small in this world, and even the smallest has its own strength to help the mightiest of the mighty. So this little mouse actually had the potential to help. So in the same way, in Krishna consciousness, even though we think ourselves, well, who are we really? You know, Bhakta Armpit in the temple, What's my contribution to the whole of ISKCON? Or I'm a simple housewife, and how can I be effective? Or how am I effective in the whole scheme of Krishna consciousness? Actually, each and every devotee is so important to the overall effect. You have no idea how much potency each individual devotee has. Someone could be just, as I say, there's no such thing as a simple housewife, but if they have that consciousness that I'm a simple housewife, and all of a sudden they go to a particular shop and just in a Krishna conscious way act very nicely to someone in this shop and give them a book or something, that person may be a friend of the Prime Minister or a part family of the Prime Minister, you don't know. And then all of a sudden that person is taken to Krishna consciousness, and it's because of your endeavor, your connection, your Krishna consciousness. So no matter how small we may think ourselves, on the larger scale, we can have a great effect. Lastly, never forget to repay the help that people give you. If someone has helped you today, don't forget to give them, they may need your help in the future. So always repay your debt. If someone is helping you, then always help them. So in the same token, you know, when we're talking about confidentiality with our equals, if someone is helping us, revealing our mind, and the giving and taking of gifts for one another is very, very important. So it's always remembering. So if someone has helped us in our Krishna consciousness, do something nice for them as well. Give something back. It doesn't need to be something monetary, or it's just do something nice. So anyway, that was the message that we get. So getting back to Diti. Diti approached Lord Shiva and was very submissive. She put her life in his hands, and Shiva was Ashutosha, merciful and very easily pleased. She realized her mistake and sought forgiveness. So forgiveness is a big thing, to be able to forgive. Actually, next week we have a so-called Diwali program at Parliament House, where we're going to be presenting the Vedic philosophy to politicians and school children and so on and so forth. And so they asked me to do a speech at Parliament House for the inauguration night on Monday night before the Premier and the opposition leader and so on and so forth. And I started researching a little bit about Diwali. And Diwali also, although it's the wrong time of the year, it's actually in November, but we're doing it in this early period so we can capture the politicians, because Parliament is sitting at the present stage, so they've moved everything a little forward. So the actual Diwali is in November, but we're doing it there to accommodate them. So the whole idea is that... So I researched a little bit for my speech. And apparently, and you may correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the major features of Diwali is to forgive and forget those people that have wronged you over the years. Is that correct? So this is a major thing. So this is a wonderful thing, actually, to forgive and forget. So in our journey of self-realizations, in our journey in Krishna consciousness, we all make mistakes. You know, we're fraught with mistakes. Actually, what's the biggest mistake that we made? Anybody know? What's the biggest mistake that we made? Coming here in the first place. Wrong decision. Coming to this material world. This is not where we belong. So anyway, that was the first mistake. And throughout the Bhagavatam, there are many, many stories of great saintly persons who have made mistakes. Isn't it? So one of them is even Lord Brahma, who's Lord Shiva's father. You know, Lord Brahma made a mistake. You know, when he kidnapped the cowherd boys. And what did he do? He offered his sincere apologies to Krishna. Right? So there's other ones. There's Maharaj Parikshit. What did Maharaj Parikshit, who did he apologize to? Huh? Did he apologize to the boy that cursed him? To the sage, that's correct. Any other pastimes you can remember where someone actually asked for forgiveness? You think of anything? No. Anyway, there's quite a few. Even Rahugana. Yeah. What happened there? Durvasa Muni. That's right, yep. Who? Sons of Kuvera, what they do?
In the Dhammadharashtra they are relieved from the curse at that time, they ask forgiveness.
That, good point, yep, that's a good one. So there are many, many different instances. Even Lord Shiva made a mistake. We're talking about Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva made a mistake. What was the mistake that Lord Shiva made? Can anybody remember? It had to do with the personality of Godhead. Huh? Mohini Murthy. Yeah, Mohini. And he was so intoxicated and so bewildered by the beauty of Mohini. You know, she came in while he was meditating and his wife was there and his disciples were there. And all of a sudden he just became raving mad and went chasing after Mohini Murthy. Was he apologetic after that incident? Anybody know? Was Lord Shiva apologetic for running after Mohini? You think so? Huh? No, he wasn't. He wasn't apologetic at all. Actually, he was proud. He said, he's proud that Krishna is so great that he can do this to me. you know. And he didn't care what anybody thinks. This is Krishna's potency. How wonderful is my Lord? You know, he completely confounded me, you know. So Lord Shiva was actually really proud. Like, wow, Krishna's actually completely bewildered me. I mean, we don't take that as an example for ourselves because, you know, Mohini Murthy's not going to go walking past us at any time soon. But, you know, but so we don't use him as an example. We don't imitate Lord Shiva. So we're all prone to making mistakes. There's different times that we're making mistakes. And we should diligently try to rectify our mistakes and really work at our faults and our difficulties. If we have, you know, a particular trait, if we have a particular weakness, you know, we should work at developing that. And if one of those weaknesses, getting back to that family violence, if one of those weaknesses is actually suppressing someone else or dominating someone else, we should change that. We should try and be more submissive and change that. It's a very bad attitude to have. And so even if when we're doing deity worship, when we do our deity worship every morning, you know, those devotees that are doing addressing the deities in that way, you know, the first thing that we do when we come out of the deity room is we prostrate ourselves and we offer our obeisances and forgiveness. What is it again? Mantra hinam kriha hinam bhakti hinam janarana apujitanamaya devam. You know, we offer this whole, yeah, you know it, this whole, you know, that, oh, please forgive me, I may have done something wrong, said the wrong mantras, especially for me. Pronounced the wrong mantras, did the wrong things, picked my nose in public, whatever, I'm so sorry, forgive me, you know. So you do that. You offer your obeisances and you forgive. But if there is a mistake or a fall down from the principles, the one thing, we should seek the Lord forgiveness straight away and try to our best of our abilities to not falter again, you know. But we are in this material world and it is a difficult road that we've picked for ourselves. And we have to actually be very mindful. The one thing, when you make a mistake and it's been a problem, leave it at that. Make sure you give the intention and you approach Krishna, I'll try and rectify my mistake. But what you shouldn't do, what you should never do, and this is also a way of Maya infiltrating and disturbing you from your service, is that you become morose about your difficulty. That you become morose about it. Oh, I'm so fallen. Oh, mea culpa. This is what we used to say in Christian. The Christians used to say, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. Oh, I'm so sinful, I'm so sinful, I'm so sinful. They used to smash their chest, right? So it's good that we understand that we've made a mistake and we ask for forgiveness and we try to rectify ourselves, but then in the same token, dust off and get on with your service. It's more important that you understand your frailty, understand the difficulties and get on with the preaching. If you are a morose person, how are you possibly able to spread this Krishna consciousness? If you're a down in the dump sort of person because you feel so, oh, I'm so fallen, and you meet that person in the milk bar again, you know, or whatever, and this is your opportunity, this is the person that has connections to the Prime Minister or someone, you know, oh, I'm so morose, I'm flopping around. You've just missed an opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness. So you should dust off and just say, let's go forward from here. Go forward. So Krishna only sees the good that we do. In essence, Krishna only sees the good that we ever do. He's not worried so much about the negative things that go on. He understands we made a mistake coming to this joint, to the material world. And we made a mistake. And so now there's so much pressure on us. But we're making the right endeavor. We're making the right endeavor. We're following our sadhana. We're following our spiritual masters. We're following the direction. And we're doing the best we can. We're following the principles. And sure, there's going to be some difficulties, but Krishna doesn't even see that. He doesn't even see that. He only sees the good things that you're doing. He only sees the positive things. Oh, that's like a father. Again, a father or mother. You know, if the child has made a little mistake, does the father or mother get hepped up over it? You know, if the child has soiled their pants, you know, they didn't make it to the toilet. I mean, does the mother and father, you know, last week you soiled your pants. No, clean him up, out he goes, that's it, back into business. So this is Krishna. Krishna only sees the good things we do, but we should be mindful. When Lord Chaitanya, there's that story of what's his name? who made that big mistake also. Remind me. Junior Haridas? No, it wasn't Junior Haridas. That made the mistake. Yeah, no. Oh, I can't think of his name. No.
What's the story?
The story was that he had to buy some rice for Lord Chaitanya, and then, you know, he got attracted by the lady that was selling the rice. He looked at her. Who was it? Was it Chota Haridas? That's right, it was Chota Haridas. And so, you know, in a sense, we could see that the Lord didn't forgive him, you know, because in a sense, there wasn't real, when he came back to Lord Chaitanya, he wasn't forgiving. He wasn't asking for forgiveness. He sort of covered it up, didn't he? He was in the renounce order, and Lord Chaitanya said, "What's wrong with you?" And then he exposed the whole thing. Oh, and then he was banned from being in Lord Chaitanya's association. But then ultimately the Lord forgave him, and Haridas was there in the ghostly body. Haridas, Chota Haridas, was there in the ghostly body and was chanting to the Lord in that way. So we just have to be really mindful, and if we've made a mistake, you know, don't be hypocritical about it and sort of hide it and think, you know, I'm beyond it. So as it's described, that was another thing. Yeah. Lord Chaitanya also worshipped Lord Shiva. This was another thing I wanted to mention. And when he travelled around South India, he used to visit all the temples, right? And especially Lord Shiva and Parvati were disguised at one time when Lord Chaitanya went to a place called Rishab Hill. And there they spent many days together. Lord Chaitanya spent many days together with Parvati and Lord Shiva. And Parvati was cooking for Lord Chaitanya. And so this was really interesting. You know, the lives of Lord Shiva is so important. And actually, we should worship Lord Shiva and be respectful of Lord Shiva. But at the same time, we should also be aware of what his position is in relationship to Lord Krishna. Sometimes also I get an opportunity to go to different temples, and they worship Lord Shiva in a different way. The majority of people see Lord Shiva, even if they're worshipping Lord Shiva, they see him as a demigod that will fulfill my desires. And so that's not his position at all. That's not the situation. I mean, he's very merciful, but in the same token, and he will give the benediction, but that's not the goal of life. The goal of life is not material prosperity. It is actually to be a devotee of Krishna. So we seek the boon of Lord Shiva. When we pray to Lord Shiva, there's nothing wrong with having a picture of Lord Shiva in your home as a great Vaishnava, and praying to him, "My dear Lord, please give me the boon that I be a good devotee, that I serve my spiritual master and Krishna, and my dear Lord Shiva, please encourage me that I can help my spiritual master in liberating and freeing people of this material world." So this is the boon that we're looking for. So in the same way as Diti was approaching Lord Shiva, we also have to work in this way of approaching this great Vaishnava, this expansion almost of Krishna, in that way, to help us in the mission that our spiritual master set up, and that is to liberate the fallen conditioned souls of this material world. That's our duty. That's the family business. And so we ask the Lord to help us in this way, and he will. So I'll stop here. Any comments or questions at all, please? About Lord Shiva. Yes, Prabhu. She got a benediction. She did become pregnant, and she had two sons. And she was actually quite pleased. It was told to her that actually you're going to have two sons, and they're going to be great demons. And you know, but actually she said, but then who told her? Someone told her, huh? You're right. And said, you know, well, actually, they're going to be killed by Krishna personally. They're going to be killed by the Supreme Lord. Vishnu is going to incarnate as Lord Nrsingadev and Varaha, and he's going to kill your sons. So she went, yay! You know, my sons are going to be killed by Krishna. She was actually really pleased about that. And then the extra boon was, is that, but your grandson is going to be one of the greatest devotees that have ever been, Prahlad Maharaj. So then she was elated. She was really, that was a great boon. So, yeah. So even sometimes with our children, you know, even if we followed all the proper traditions, I mean, we didn't disturb the yajna when we were trying to procreate. We did everything properly. Sometimes even our children don't necessarily turn out the way we hold out in hope that our grandchildren will also take the Krishna consciousness. Actually, Bhakti and I are expecting our first grandchild next month. We hold out in hope that this one is going to be a bhakta, you know. Because our children are sort of a little bit off the beaten path at the moment. So, yeah, so anyway, you know, we hope that in our Krishna consciousness we can develop some nice Krishna conscious children. She was very happy that this was the situation. Yeah, there's many stories like that. That's why the spiritual master emphasizes the fact that we should perform a proper samskara. When we're ready to conceive children, that we do the proper samskara. And Prabhupada has made it very, very simple. When the time is right for a lady to become pregnant, she and he, the husband and the wife, have to chant a certain number of rounds. Generally, we were told 50 rounds before consummating having the child. And so also it is incumbent upon the female to actually make the environment very sattvic, very uplifting, beautiful incense, and you feed each other very nice prasadam. And so the mood is very, very positive. But it's this samskara of chanting your rounds prior to it is really, really important. And then it's a question of not self-sense gratification, it's more a question of then satisfying one another in the form of bringing the child into the world. It's a really interesting story. The first time that Bhakti and I, this is very intimate, first time Bhakti and I were wanting to have a child, and we'd set the date, we found out, okay, this is the most fertile time, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And so we thought, okay, terrific, we'll do it. And I, as usual, was caught up in all sorts of service that I had to do for the temple president and so on and so forth. But I chanted 50 rounds. You know, I got up really early and chanted my 50 rounds. And so I had to tell the temple president, actually, I said, listen, Prabhu, we're trying to go for a child today. And he was keeping me engaged the whole time. I said, hey, listen, you know, she's waiting. This is today, you know. So he said, oh my God, you know, I'm so sorry. And he actually drove me to our house, right? So then we got there, and we conceived and everything. And then at the end, Bhakti said, you know what, Bhakta? I didn't chant 50 rounds. And I said, what? You didn't chant 50 rounds? She turned around and said, yeah, I chanted 64. Oh. A little pastime. Anyway, probably a little too confidential, but anyhow. And she was pregnant with our first birth child, Chintamani. Anyway, I'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki!
I've got some time maybe.
Oh, God.
Okay. thank you. Francis.
Yeah, I've got that one. I've got it. Yeah, good one. Thank you, Prabhu. Very good one. Yeah. And they'll remember that time. Yeah. Very well.